T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
How do you feel you're perceived by the average pirate fan, and how would you like to be known?
I don't spend a lot of time worrying about things that I can't directly control. What I can focus on is putting the very best team we can on the field in 2019, continue to build on the improvement that we had in 19. What worries me only about the perception is to the extent that it negatively impacts the team itself. We can't allow that to become an internal distraction. So we're going to focus on the work that we need to get it done, put the very best team we can on the field.
Eric Hagman, a one-on-one with Pirates owner Bob Nutting. And some hard-hitting questions from Eric. You just heard the full interview last hour with the Midday guys. And Eric's going to join us in 40 minutes. It's part of a big show. Tons of Kevin Colbert comments on Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown's future. And that's what's on tap, brought to you by Chris's good friends at Fatheads Brewery. Hagman to Nutting on how he's perceived, saying it's something he really can't control. He's just going to do his best and try his best as Pirates owner. Chris, how does Bob Nutting change his perception here? What can he do? Is it so far gone? Has he crossed the Rubicon, so to speak?
For a lot of people, fans? I think, yes, he has. But I sort of balk, to use the baseball term, at the notion that that's something, how he's perceived is something that he has no control over. He does have some control over it, though. He has agency over how he's perceived.
If I show up to work every day,
people want him to put a winner on the field. People want him to finance a winning baseball team. And I use that term very pointedly because for some people, it's not enough in this town. They'd be happy if the team won, regardless of how much was spent on the team. But if they won like the A's did last year, or the Rays did last year, winning 90 games or something like that, without spending a lot of money on the team, people would see that as a validation of a thing they don't like. They would say, well, yeah, you won, but I don't like the fact that it validates your way of doing things. If there was more outlaid, I think, and they won, people would like him. That's like saying you or I, after maybe years straight on the air of being just viciously pessimistic and vindictive about everything, never having a moment of levity.
So pretty much our show, every day up until this point.
Say somebody said to you, Andrew, you are so crushingly negative.
Mm-hmm. Nobody says that, by the way.
No, never do. Say, though, that you actually were crushingly negative. I don't think you are.
Okay.
But say that you were, that you never had a positive take on any of the teams in town, that you had been working here for 9 years and had never said the Penguins win 2 cups, they suck, it's all going to be over. Mm-hmm. And then you said, and then somebody asked you, Andrew, do you worry about how you're perceived? And you said, I have no control over that. I would say, Andrew, yes, you do. If you called it like it is and were positive, people would start to like you more.
Yeah.
In that setting. So he has control. There are things that he can do that I feel pretty safe in saying would make people view him more positively.
Okay, so what are some of those things? There is the blanket statement, spend more. Do more. But is that's all? Like, it doesn't matter how he does it or how he spends it or where the money goes.
Who's a team that's made a free agent signing that you like so far? Not Machado for $300 million, but give me a free agent signing.
I like the Twins signing Nelson Cruz.
Okay. What was the end of the rate on that? I know he got signed at a discount.
Craig, you watched MLB Network. What is it, like 2 years, $30 million?
I don't know the exact numbers, but that sounds right. It was a decent
deal. Or here, how about this? Edwin Encarnacion went to the Indians a couple years ago for $360 million.
Mm-hmm.
Make that deal. That's power at first base that they got paid back in a pretty good. Would you say they got paid back fairly for that? They flipped him. But they spent some money on a power guy, and they got power, yes?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
He produced power. He produced home runs.
He was a middle-of-the-order player on a guy that went to the playoffs every year.
He was middle-of-the-order thump.
Yep.
When I heard Eric And I thought Eric did an excellent job of asking some very direct questions of Bob Nutting today. When I heard Eric talk about the lineup, the roster, the construction, how you know the funds allocated, one of the things said was, we believe Josh Bell will play, that swing will come around, that he'll be a power guy. There's belief, and then there's just going out and getting what in Encarnacion's case is a known commodity.
So it's hope versus
establishment.
Yeah.
It would be like a team drafting a wide receiver this year that needs one. They trade for Antonio Brown. There's something that comes with that. Are you overpaying? Maybe, whatever. But you know if he's on your team, he's going to produce. Versus drafting a guy that might be a bust. Mm-hmm. Could be the next, you know, Matt Jones, to use a way back example.
Well, we know what hasn't really helped Bob Nutting's perception here. What didn't change his perception was ending 20 years of losing. That has not bought Bob Nutting a whole heck of a lot. You go to the playoffs for 3 straight years. You produce a 98-win season. Bad luck, you're in the wrong division and you have to play in the wild card game 3 years in a row. And ending that drought, that agony, that pain, did not elevate him in the minds of fans. Right? I mean, if it did, it was temporary, it was short term.
The happiness fans took
long.
From 2013 is dramatically outweighed, I think, by the anger. And this is my perception hearing people talk to you and to me and to everybody, to Craig on the streets. They come up to Craig asking for money line tips and whatever.
That's now looked at as a blip on the radar.
Well, yeah, and it's looked at as far less positive than the post 2015 offseason is looked at as a negative.
Yeah, the John Jaso, Ryan Vogel
John
song
Neese.
Offseason. Yes. Okay, so there's that. Let's talk about what else hasn't worked for his perception. Last year's trade deadline. You could make the argument, and I think we all did at the time, that based on the type of player and the kind of moves the Pirates made at the trade deadline, they reacted to a winning streak. They reacted emotionally for what was otherwise a mediocre team.
Mm-hmm.
They reacted boldly to a burst, a spurt of winning.
The GM said right before that burst, he was essentially saying, I'll wait and see, and if the team forces my hand, okay.
And they
ripped off 11 in a row, which is the definition of forcing your hand.
And Neil Huntington did something that no one thought he would ever do. He didn't conservatively hoard prospects. He flipped Meadows and Glasnow for Chris Archer, and they traded for one of the best relief pitchers on the market.
Correct.
And that was, I think, received well by Pirates fans. But again, it did not last very long.
Because they played very poorly immediately thereafter. Archer took a long time to even sniff becoming the pitcher that people thought they were getting. He was very mediocre at first. He had a couple good starts late, but by then they were out of it because the Brewers just put their foot on the gas pedal. The Cubs and the Cardinals were still better. And so even though those moves symbolically I felt like were what people always wanted to see out of them, the end result was what people cared about, and it wasn't good. And you know what? And I listened to this whole interview. When the team, you asked me what he could do to help his own perception, when he said the team had a 7-win improvement over the prior season, that they won 82 games, I feel very strongly that the people that listen to the show, that the people that show up to his ballpark or watch his team on TV,
mm-hmm.
do not want to hear that an 82-79 team improved by 7 games, because it's still fresh enough in their minds that this franchise won 98 games.
Can I just throw out a complete wacky hypothetical to both you guys, to Mr. Baseball on the other side of the glass now, your new Pirates pre- and post-game
host,
Craig
Riley. I see the reflection of Baseball Reference in there.
Who will have to trade his green visor for a Pirates cap soon.
Can you get a custom one made that's like a clear Pirates visor?
I'm looking into that.
I think you need the pillbox hat on that little head of yours.
I have one.
Well, you're not wearing it enough.
How about the guy that can't play lacrosse because he doesn't have a helmet big enough?
I saw that
story.
That's
very relatable for old CM.
And it wasn't you.
That's very relatable.
So, just a complete hypothetical for you.
Yeah.
Let's say the Pirates signed Bryce Harper today.
Okay.
And everything we know about the Pirates, know to be true, completely changed in the snap of a finger.
11 years, $350 million.
The biggest free agent contract in team history is Francisco Liriano. The only one they've actually seen to the finish line is Russell Martin, which was what, Craig?
2 years, $17 million.
$17 million deal? Thank
Correct.
You, Chris. They do something that completely, you know, flips the universe. Hell freezes over, pigs fly. They sign Bryce Harper.
Mm-hmm.
If they won a World Series with him, and then they went the Marlins method and said, this isn't sustainable. We can't pay this guy in perpetuity to the end of the contract, but we got what we needed out of him. We won. We actually didn't make as much money doing it as we would have liked because winning can be a little bit more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
The Astros were the most profitable team in baseball history when they stripped the team down to a $13 million payroll and lost like 108 games. So now that we won it, let's just completely sell everybody
Blow
off.
It up.
What would the perception of Bob Nutting be then?
Negative still.
Still negative.
Correct. Because even
so
though
he could win a World Series and give out the biggest free agent contract in history, and if he didn't see it through with the player, he would still be looked at as a villain.
Yeah, because
in this
town. I think championships are weirdly overrated in this sense. People want their team to be relevant and competitive and sort of be churning grist every year, always be in the mix for stuff.
So if that's
and if it's a one-year championship fire sale combo,
okay.
No one likes that. They feel like somebody just went for the temporary
even if they ended
the temporary high of eating candy.
Even if they ended a 40-year drought?
Correct. People would be happy, but
okay.
Not that happy so then, when the bill came due.
So then when you say that, it makes me feel like if I'm in Bob Nutting's shoes, my perception how I'm viewed is irreparable. You just told me I could give out the biggest contract and win a World Series, and people would still hate my guts here. So what incentive does he have to win? What incentive does he have to spend money? Is there one? Other than sheer competitiveness, where he's in a glorified board game with 29 other guys, and the competitive juices take over, and he says, I want to do better than... But do they even measure themselves that way? When you get these guys in a room, does the guy that won the World Series get the biggest pat on the back, or does the owner who made the most money get the biggest pat on the back? I'm not even sure. I'm seriously asking that question. Does John Henry get a big pat on the back, or did Jeffrey Lurie, who basically swindled Miami County, bilked them out of billions of dollars to build him a palatial stadium, does he get the biggest pat on the back? Like, wow, man, that was awesome.
John Henry has repeatedly, the Red Sox were the ones who hated the fact that the Pirates were trying to jake the draft system a couple years ago. And other teams have been the ones who have inquired about like the Marlins' fiscal habits. So that makes, I think that not every owner is the same. I think some of these guys, the late Mike Ilitch wanted to win desperately and spent to do it and never got it done. I don't think any two of these guys are the same. Do you? Do you think there's a hive mind over there? Maybe when it comes to crushing the players or
Based
winning in
CBAs. Based on comments
CBAs,
I saw, it doesn't seem like the Ricketts family, now that they've won a World Series in Chicago with the Cubs, is hell-bent on winning.
John Henry said spending money helps. He seems to be a guy that wants that'll spend to win, doesn't he?
Yeah.
George Steinbrenner always seemed like he wanted to spend to win.
And his
Yankees took on Giancarlo Stanton's contract.
They'll
probably sign Aaron Judge to a mega deal when it comes time to do that. Somebody is going to pay Mike Trout, if he doesn't get hurt and keeps producing, a record-breaking deal. So I don't think it's fair. I'm not saying fair. I don't think it's accurate to paint all these guys with a broad brush.
How does Bob Nutting change his perception in Pittsburgh? 412-928-9370. That's 412-928-9370. That's the Edgar Snyder and Associates fan text line. Edgar Snyder reminds you to text responsibly. Exclusive audio to 93.7 The Fan coming up next. Bob Nutting on the Pirates payroll. It's the PM team.
Absolutely, Neil has had and continues to have, whether it's in the trading deadline, even in during spring training, has been able to adjust and make additions and make changes in the roster. There's no question that that has been a part of his plan and his process for many years. You look at the addition of Archer and Kella midseason last year. I think those are the types of changes that impacted not only half a season in 18, but became a real building block for 1920 and beyond.
Listen to the Morning Show Friday for your chance to win a signed Donnie Schell jersey. Thanks to Total Sports Enterprises. Visit tsashop.com. And check them out at Eat Drink Pittsburgh on Thursday. That event is now sold out thanks to the Craig Muller fans who are lining up.
Craig Muller?
Did I say Craig Muller?
We'll go to the tape.
I was originally going to say Craig Riley.
And then you thought of Mulsey.
And then I thought of you.
You thought of Mulsey. And I just combined the two. And you kind of just messed the two of them up.
Do you like Craig enough to name a kid after him?
No.
Yeah, I figured you'd say that.
No. I was going to ask how insulted you are that he combined our names.
Do you know what he's starting to do a little bit?
Hmm.
He's starting to take on some Joe qualities, Craig.
No, don't say that.
Yeah.
In what ways?
Referring to shows by the wrong
name.
Yeah,
just little
I haven't done that yet, have I?
Little absent-minded ticks here and there.
What? Like, give me another one.
I've heard you slip up on names just randomly, and usually you catch yourself.
Well, the next time I do that, stop me dead in my tracks and say you got the name wrong.
All right, you don't do Joe's biggest thing, which is the ask a question that has just been asked because you're off thinking about, like, set plays from out of bounds for your, you know, basketball.
So that was Bob Nutting.
Yes.
With Eric Hagman, who is going to join us in 10 minutes on Neil Huntington having financial flexibility. In a different Q&A today with a pool of reporters, Nutting was asked why payroll is so low, the lowest in the National League, 29th in baseball, only the Rays as of right now have a lower payroll. And Bob Nutting said, quote, we need to focus on the things we believe are controllable. Then gets asked, is payroll not controllable? Nutting's response, I think payroll scale and range broadly is not controllable. We're going to have certain resources that we have, and I think that's the reality of the marketplace. So what he is saying here is that baseball, without a salary cap, with only a luxury tax, creates a world where small market teams can't spend with the top teams is how I interpret that.
I go back to the old...
I can't control that they allow, you know, we don't have revenue sharing as much as the other sports. It's not a level playing field. I can't control that the Yankees and the Red Sox spend over $200 million on players. I can't keep up with that.
But that's talking about the other teams and what they're going to spend. Did you ever have a teacher when somebody would say, can I go to the bathroom? They'd say, I don't know, can you? So that they would force you to say, may I go to the bathroom?
Because your mom strikes me as someone who would do
that. She absolutely would play that game. Yeah. She didn't get that pedantic about it all the time. She'd say it once. Point being, the whole idea of can you control? Well, no, you can't control the other teams and what they're going to do any more than they can control what you're going to do. But you can control your own house. You can, you know what? I look at the White Sox. You can make and have it known that you made a ridiculous offer to Manny Machado that some people would have called more attractive. I don't think it was, but they made a very competitive offer. And another team steps in with one that he wanted more. That's what you can't control, but you can control what you're going to put out there, what you're going to go for. I don't like the idea of saying, whoa, finances in this sport, man. Look at what those teams want to spend. Look at their TV deals. You can also control your resources by negotiating the best TV deal possible.
Yes, but there are a few kernels of truth there. And I would, if I'm in that Q&A session and I'm thinking on my feet, and he makes these comments about how it's outside of his control, and he can't dictate to the commissioner the way the league works. He can't tell him that it's in everybody's best interest to have a level playing field with, you know, a strict salary cap and maybe a salary floor to keep everybody within a few million dollars of each other. I would just ask him politely then, and he, you know, Bob does a very good job of being evasive in his answers, speaking in generalities, but I would say to him, why did you accept or vote for this system? Why did you accept this system in which you can have a gulf, like the Red Sox have a $220 million payroll and the Tampa Bay Rays have a $51 million payroll. Why would you accept that? Why wouldn't you? The Rays actually voted against it, to their credit.
What was the most profitable team in baseball history?
The Houston Astros.
When their payroll was?
$13 million. Alex Rodriguez made more than the entire team that year.
Okay. Well, there's my answer.
But there is something to be said in this debate about what the Pirate owner refuses to do. There is a debate over who is more responsible for the Pirates' thrift. Is it the owner or is it the sport? Is it baseball or is it Bob Nutting? And I don't think the answer is simple, and I don't think it's black and white.
I think one of the answers is that people want to win, and the players you're going to put on the field are going to try to win, and the manager of those players is going to try to win, and therefore, and because there's always variance in pro sports, you will have the Kevin Cash-led Rays who win 90 games. Don't make the playoffs, but win 90 games, which by almost every definition is a great season in that powerhouse division. And as long as teams keep doing that, the early 2000s A's, last year's A's, as long as it is possible, and teams give you object lessons that you can win on a low budget, it will always be justification for doing things that way either all the time or most of the time, because teams can say, oh, look at the Orioles. They spent a lot of money, lost 115 games. And it's not factually incorrect, but I'll go back again and say it's like a cold snap in the middle of a hellishly hot, you know, overall year or something like that. It doesn't prove that that is the way to go or that that is advisable all the time.
But I would have just as much animosity towards Rob Manfred and the higher-ups in baseball as I would the team's owner.
I do, though. I mean, I think Rob Manfred comes off like a clown show when he talks, when he speaks around the issue. In fact, you asked to start the show, the one thing, you know, is there, what could Bob Nutting do to repair or to improve his image among Pirates fans? Mm-hmm. And I honestly believe one of the things he could do that would not take any fiduciary commitment or anything like that would be when he's answering questions, when he does give a one-on-one, sometimes I hear too much of an analytical tone. If he could find a way to more maybe clearly convey the passion he seems to speak with that he says he has, I think fans would give a crap. Like if you hear when George Steinbrenner talked about the Yankees, you knew that's all he cared about.
Yep.
Now, he was spending money, yes, but he talked about like them like a fan who was pissed off when things weren't going well. Mm-hmm. Fans respond to that. It might be a surface gesture, but when fans think or get the idea that you are as angry about things as they are, that's something they are receptive to.
That, to me, is the reason why Mark Cuban is so well-liked. Not only is he from here, but he wears his emotions on his sleeve. And he might be as, you know, behind the scenes, he might be as big of a bean counter as any owner. But his public image is one where he lives and dies with his team.
And I think that's not, I don't think that's a coincidence either, because Mark Cuban would be called Nouveau Riche, like New Rich, right? Broadcast.com. That's how he becomes a billionaire. The Nutting family fortune, I think, has been around for a pretty long time in newspapers. I think it's two different ways of conducting yourself, right? Steve Ballmer screams like a banshee. He's a relatively new rich guy. And I even feel like the old money in the world looks down on the new money, even if there's more of it.
Well, that's probably why they didn't want Cuban in baseball.
Well, you act a certain way when you are worth a certain dollar amount.
Follow us on Twitter at 93.7 The Fan, driven by Shorty Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. Eric Hagman conducted the one-on-one interview with Bob Nutting. He's going to join us next to kind of take us behind the scenes, what it was like just conducting this interview and what his biggest takeaways were from it. He's Chris Muller, I'm Andrew Filippone. It's the PM team.
They will not step foot back into the ballpark. That is where their feeling is. How do you respond when I make a comment like that to you, or if someone has made a comment like that to you?
I can't respond to every fan. I hope there aren't people who feel that way. Certainly a few years ago, we had 2.5 million people in the ballpark supporting a very strong team that in 13, 14, and 15 greatly overperformed the expectations that people had. We didn't get the job done and bring home a world championship, but we put a real team on the field. Clearly, we had a tough cycle over the last couple of years, significant improvement on the field last year. I think this year we're extremely well positioned to take that next step forward. That's what the players believe. That's what our coaching staff believes. It's what the front office believes. It's what I believe.
Eric Hagman with Pirates owner Bob Nutting today. 93.7 The Fan time is 2:44, and it's brought to you by Danner Boots. Eric joins us live from Pirates spring training. Eric has just received rave reviews for this interview, and it's my turn to congratulate him on a job well done. Eric, way
Thank
to go.
You, Andrew. Thank you. I appreciate it. It's he's not the easiest person to interview. I think we all know that. It's Bob's not going to say too many things that are going to get him in trouble, and he doesn't speak off the cuff very much. It's the answers that he wants to give, he's going to give.
What was your biggest takeaway then from this conversation?
Yeah, I think my biggest takeaway was, you know, I painted a pretty negative picture by saying, you know, what fans have said to me directly, what has been the case with the attendance falling nearly a million over 3 years. And I thought maybe there would be a little bit more emotion from him to that, because this was one of the National League's best franchises just 3 years ago. And right now, you don't know what direction it's headed. And I'm not sure they have all the answers, but it just didn't seem like he really was that upset about it. I know if I lost a million people through my turnstiles and people were making comments about me, it would bother me a lot more. Now, maybe it bothers him inside, and he does a great job of not showing it, but it was just so matter-of-fact how he spoke.
I guess I could editorialize, Eric, but it feels like attendance is not what it used to be in terms of being important to clubs, either from the bottom line perspective or anything else, but that's sort of neither here nor there. What you just said, though, was sort of my big takeaway in listening to it, and let me be the last person maybe today to congratulate you on what I thought was an excellent job that you did with that.
It
feels to me, Andrew and I opened the show, and Andrew asked this. He just said, how can Bob Nutting, what could he do to improve his image among Pirates fans? And I said one thing he can do that costs nothing is sound more passionate when he is speaking about the team. In the clip Andrew played to intro this interview, you hear him talk about three good years and then a couple of down years. I think he says down cycle, almost like he's talking about what he ordered for breakfast this morning. And it just feels to me like there is sometimes a lack of overtly perceptible passion from the man.
That's the point, yes, that I came away with. Now, I will say in fairness, the one answer that he gave when he expounded on his perception, and he said, you know, I hope it doesn't affect the ball club. And I was just waiting for him to take that one additional step beyond that, and he kind of stopped. Now, I talked to some of the writers who were in with him just prior to myself going in with him, mm-hmm. and he got a question very similar to what I had asked him, and apparently he did go into a little bit more detail, so there was a little bit more passion that he doesn't think it's fair that the players have to suffer for the fans not liking him. But I was hoping that he would go into more detail with that with me. Now, I didn't know that he'd already been asked that question, that we hadn't talked amongst ourselves, because I followed in immediately. But I just thought there was a chance for him to really show that passion with that answer.
This spring training report is brought to you by WeatherSeal Home Services. Eric Hagman down in Bradenton talked to Bob Nutting earlier today. For a full recap, you can go to 937thefan.com and read about it there. Eric, when you talked to Bob Nutting, and it was about a 10-minute interview, did you get the sense when it got to the conversation turned to resources and payroll and what he can put into the team and what he can't, did you get the sense at all that you were talking to a man who was frustrated by baseball's economic state, somebody who felt like the deck was stacked against him in small market teams?
No, not for a single second, no. And he even later in the interview, not in regard to a question directed at what you're talking about, but he praised, you know, the powers that be in Major League Baseball. No, I don't get the sense at all that he's frustrated by that.
That says a lot to me, Eric. I don't know.
You're speechless. It's like the Cook Ron Jeremy moment here.
Because at the same time I'm thinking about what I want to ask Eric, and then when I hear that says a whole heck of a lot to me. Do you get the sense, Eric, from talking to the man when you're talking to him, that he when he talks about how hopeful he is, I liked your weather analogy to start things. Do you get the sense that he genuinely enjoys this part of what he does? Comes down here, he's kind of away from, as you put it, the ugly weather and maybe the pessimism up here. Do you get the sense that he's genuinely happy, that he likes being the owner of a ball club, that he likes the baseball aspect of this?
Yes, I do. Very much so. And, you know, he's been down here for 3 days, I believe, now. Yeah, I think Monday was the first day that I saw him. And every day he's been out on the field talking to the players, laughing and joking. I posted some of those photos on Twitter and on the website. You know, guys like Josh Bell and Dickerson and Cervelli. I mean, he goes up to them and they carry on conversation. It's not just like, hi, glad to see you guys, and then he moves on to someone else. No, I think this is the part of it that he really, really does like. And he gets to see these young players, because that's the mantra right now. You know, we're a young team. We're on the upswing. And yes, I think he would probably enjoy being at, you know, the beginning of February through mid-March all year long.
Eric, do you think that the Pirates are on the cusp of doing something big? He referenced the Kella and Archer trades in your interview. You asked him about arbitration-eligible pitchers, and he gave you a little bit of a generic answer, but praised what those guys have done. Do you think that there's any incentive on his part? Man, and you look at what another small market team did yesterday with the Machado deal to San Diego. Did you feel like you were talking to a man who was just looking for the right situation to strike and give out a big deal?
Well, I asked him that. You know, I did a hypothetical, but I did it with a guy like Manny Machado in mind. What I said, if there's a need that arises, would you have an issue with on a short-term contract? Because I think we know the answer on a long-term contract. But would you have, you know, the wherewithal and the desire to sign a player for $20 to $25 million for a year or two if he can help you and put you over the top? And again, I got the standard answer from him. Well, it's up to Neil to decide what is right for us and how we're going to build this team. And so that was the stock answer. Well, the fact of the matter is, Neil Huntington can only do so much because he doesn't control the budget. And the budget probably isn't there. They would have to expand the budget. The budget as it is right now is not there for such a move like that. But they could increase it, certainly up to $100 million if they wanted to. And there's your $20 million or $25 million player.
Yeah.
Eric, do you get the sense, too, that as an overall mission statement, this franchise is going to, when they try to, you know, acquire talent or keep talent, it's going to be by buying out arbitration years, by trying to hand out McCutcheon-type deals whenever possible?
Yeah, I think that's what they will attempt to do, Chris. But I think it's a really difficult time to do this because of the uncertainty over the labor situation. Let's face it, the players, not talking about the Pirates in particular, but the players generally are pretty upset with what's going on. They're not going to give up a nickel. You know, the union is not going to allow them to give up a nickel, take a hometown discount or anything like that. But I think he expressed that he is willing to do that, which they have done in the past. You know, the one thing I did not ask him, and I wish I had, was, you know, the biggest contract the Pirates gave out was 19 years ago when they signed Jason Kendall for $60 million. Mm-hmm. 19 years.
Yeah.
What is $60 million worth today?
2 years of Manny Machado.
Yeah. But, you know, it's almost like they're just playing a different game from so many of the other teams.
Spring training report brought to you by Weather Seal Home Services. Finishing up with Eric Hagman, who did an excellent job with Bob Nutting today. Eric, the trope is that hope springs eternal at spring training. Last year, that wasn't true because of the David Freese and Josh Harrison situations and the McCutcheon and Garrett Cole trades. Do you think, when you've talked to the players there, that they are trying to put lipstick on a bad situation? Or do you think you are dealing with a team that is genuinely optimistic and excited about this upcoming season? Or are they frustrated with the team's conservative offseason?
Andrew, to be honest with you, I think it might be a little bit of all three, really. But for public consumption, the players will tell you they're optimistic about this. And I have to say, I can't speak for any of the other writers who have been down here, who have spoken with a lot of these guys. You know, they'll pull them off into the corner and you kind of wonder, what are they asking them? But no one has conveyed anything close to public that they're unhappy. Tyone, as the player rep, kind of came out the other day but spoke in general terms with baseball. I don't detect that these players are unhappy. I think that they do feel optimistic. I talked to Lonnie Chisenhall today. You know, he was in Cleveland with some really darn good teams over there. He said, I really like this team. He said, these guys are great guys. I want to win with these guys. So, you know, you have to take these guys on face value. Does it mean they are frustrated that maybe, you know, a $12 to $15 million bullpen guy or maybe a position player, a shortstop, that they didn't go out and get that guy? Probably. But again, they've been here long enough to know what the situation is.
All right, Eric. We look forward to you coming back. All Ron has done is bitched and moaned about Colony updates since you've left. So for our own sake and sanity, we're looking forward to you coming back north.
Oh, my. All right, guys.
See you, E. Eric Hagman from down in Bradenton. Fan weather brought to you by Sun Chevy. Route 19 in McMurray, get a sweetheart of a deal with Auto Show Savings. It's 35 degrees right now, and we'll see more rain, but it doesn't look like we'll see more snow. Kevin Colbert talked to reporters for 35 minutes today. His first comments since the end of the season on Le'Veon Bell's future, on Antonio Brown's future. You're only going to hear the audio here. No voicemail talk. It's the PM team on the Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.